Okay, good morning, everyone. I hope you all can hear me. Good, good, good. What a lovely introduction. Thank you, Lana. And yeah, the music's awesome this morning. Thank you, as it always is. All right, so let me look. Where's my order of service here? Okay, so this is Awakening Together's weekly Sunday gathering. And how we open up is we give everybody an opportunity to say good morning to one another, much as in your brick-and-mortar church, you might lean over the pew and talk to your neighbor there, shake hands, give hugs.
262966.
I apologize. That's what we do here. So I'm going to give the mic back up so Lynn can play us a song while we all greet one another.
We are awakening to the calling of the mystic, awakening in the flowering of the heart. Everybody here melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love.
Thank you, Lynn, for playing our opening song. All right. Gosh, it feels like I've never done this before. Let me turn the light on so I can see what my paperwork here in front of me. Okay. So let's look at our statement of purpose. We are an assembly of equals joined in common purpose, awakening to one true self, within an appearance of many faiths, many cultures, and many symbols. We seek to discern one truth and to rest in its embrace. Let's, I'm sorry, I'm taking a moment to, I don't know why this feels like it's the first time I've ever done it. I guess that's a good thing. In addition to reading our statement of purpose, I would like to also read one of our core values that fits with, I know I'm not saying anything because I had not picked one out, so I'm looking at our core values to see which one fits with my talk this morning. You guys know what I'm talking about this morning. My talk is I forget what I called it. Wow, I am really disorganized this morning. Experiencing the now and experiencing reality. Yeah. I don't... Yeah, that's what I'm doing right now. I'm sitting right in this in this moment, not having prepared. You know, you guys know that I have struggled with this. Yeah, you, experiencing the now, even if it is feeling the feeling of being disorganized. I have struggled with not preparing, but that is certainly what I've done this morning, is not prepared, even to the extent that I have not picked out one of our core values. So let me just read you one of our core values here. We affirm one true self as the only truth. We live this value by embracing what is helpful on the path of awakening without idolizing any spiritual doctrine as truth. Okay, amen. Let's look at our announcements for this morning. Okay, I want to remind you that this week we sent out an all-member email asking you to rejoin Awakening Together. Regina tells me that a few people have experienced difficulty rejoining Awakening Together. There's a confirmation email that's supposed to be sent after you fill out the form. After you click on that initial email and fill out the form, then you're supposed to get a confirmation email that you have to again click on. And a few people said that they did not get that confirmation email. If you didn't receive that email and click on the subscribe me button in that email, then you are not, in fact, added to the new member list. So if you didn't get that email, the confirmation email, please check for it in your spam or junk folder. If you don't find it there, please email Regina at regina@awakeningtogether.org with your name, address, and telephone number, and she will enter you in a new member database manually. Yeah, thanks. Okay. Our second announcement is about our movie group tonight, our spirit-led movie discussion group. Tonight we are going to be discussing the movie The Nines with Ryan Reynolds and Melissa McCarthy. Connie and I watched that here last night. We had a good time watching that. If you haven't watched it yet, you might consider going to John Mark Stroud's website, One Who Wakes, he has that on his website. And of course, he gives an introduction and stops the movie at various points to talk about it. That's a fun way to watch that movie. That's the first time I had watched it that way, although I've seen that movie many, many times. But the movie is The Nines with Ryan Reynolds and Melissa McCarthy. And what we recommend that you do is to say a prayer, just to be open to see what you need to see in the movie. And say the prayer before the movie, watch the movie, and then... I'm afraid my phone's going to be making... Yeah, there it is. Okay, so say a prayer, watch the movie, and then journal afterwards. And then bring that journaling with you tonight so we can discuss it. So it's a fun time. If you haven't done it before, really ought to try it. We have a really good time. That's tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern time. Okay. All right. And then right after the movie group at 9 p.m. Eastern time is the third edition of Carrie Triffitt's 8-week miniseries, Living in Mastery. Carrie's a very talented teacher, and I think you will like what you hear when you join us. So be sure and join us at 9 p.m. for Carrie Triffitt, Living in Mastery. Okay, and then finally, about the fall retreat. There are 3 weeks left to get the early bird discount for our fall retreat. Our fall retreat this year is from October 23rd through the 30th. It features Regina Dawn Akers, Brent Haskell. I've never gotten so many texts in one morning. Anyway, the fall retreat features Regina. Gina Dawn Akers, Brent Haskell, and John Mark Stroud. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Regina's going to share some practical tips for us, how to put what we've been learning into practice in our daily lives. And of course, Brent Haskell, his books are A Journey Beyond Words. Connie's helped me here. And The Other Voice. Brent is always very, very informative. He's a fabulous fella. And then John Mark Stroud. And most of you know John Mark Stroud. He's the one that does does these movie groups. He also does play shops, not workshops, play shops. And I'm really looking forward to that. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. But what you need to remember is, if you're going, you should go ahead and sign up now. You got 3 weeks left to save a significant amount of money to get a really good discount, get the early bird discount. Sign up within the next 3 weeks. Okay. Let's see. Where are we? All right. I am going to now let go of the mic so we can, change gears a little bit, settle in and get ready for our message this morning. And take the mic. Thank you.
When I was a boy each week, Sunday we would go to church, pay attention to the priest, and he would read the Holy Word. Consecrate the holy bread, and everyone would kneel and bow. Today the only difference is everything is holy now. Everything, everything, everything is holy now. And when I was in Sunday school, we learned about the time Moses split the sea in two, Jesus made the water wine. And I remember feeling sad, miracles don't happen still. Now I can't keep track, cause everything's a miracle. Everything, everything, everything's a miracle. Wine from water is not so small, but an even better magic trick is that anything is here at all. So challenging thing becomes not to look for miracles, but finding where there isn't. Holy water was rare at best, barely wet my fingertips. But now I have to hold my breath, like I'm swimming in a sea of it. It used to be a world half there, heaven's second rain hand me down. But I walk with a reverent air, cause everything is holy now. This morning outside I stood, I saw a little red-winged bird shining like a burning bush and singing like a scripture verse. It made me want to bow my head. I remember when church let out, how things have changed since then. Everything is holy now. It used to be a world half there, heaven's second-rate hand-me-down. But I walk it with a reverent air, 'cause everything is holy now.
Thank you, Lynn. What a perfect song. Lovely. Everything is holy now. Okay, let's have a moment of prayer. I do want to express my gratitude for the opportunity to teach what I would learn, to reflect on my experience in order to share it with others. I would ask for assistance that I convey the message that I and others might hear it in a way that helps us to live it, to experience it in our daily lives. I would ask for assistance in remembering that I am only a conduit, and ask for assistance in getting out of the way so that I can hear the message, so that I can be that conduit, so that my brothers here with me today can hear what they need to hear and take it with them into their daily lives. Amen. Okay, and now it's time for our member reading. And our member reading this morning is done by my beloved sister, who's sitting here with me, Connie Poole. She will be reading Jan Fraser's new teaching, Consciousness and Chronic Pain. Connie. All right. We're just going to switch seats, so give us just a second.
Hi, good morning.
Okay, thank you, Jacqueline.
Okay, jump right in here. A conscious orientation to ongoing pain, whether physical or emotional, means the ongoingness of the condition doesn't hold your attention. Whatever attended is this moment. Whatever the moment consists of, however bad it may feel, however likely the condition may appear via the mind to be unending or uncertain, this being with the now occurs without resistance, without regard for anything the mind could introduce into the picture. The now is not experienced as a moment in a succession of moments. It is simply the only thing that feels real. Conscious awareness has access to immediate experience, that is, to life itself. Only the ordinary mind appears to have access to something that isn't here right now. This impression of concurrent reality is, of course, an illusion. To be with the now is to allow awareness to flood sensible present moment reality. Any sensation in the body, physical or in the heart, an activity being engaged in, anything the senses can detect in the immediate sense, in the immediate scene. Everything else, that is, anything having to do with the ongoingness or the possible future, is accessible only when the mind is engaged. Indulging the apparent reality of the mental stream only compounds the momentary physical pain, adding emotional discomfort to what's already felt in the body, because then it's as though you're experiencing the future or a distant situation right now. The pain then truly looks unendurable. But of course the future, like something happening in another location, cannot be experienced. It can only be thought about. And thinking, as everyone knows, is a potential causer of emotional anguish. Being in the present without resistance or mental handling gives you the experience of aliveness. This is true even if it hurts right now to be alive. To be conscious is to sense the always underlying aliveness. What momentarily form it takes, whatever momentary form it takes, you do not experience chronic pain. You experience this moment's sensation. To recall that this momentary experience is part of an ongoing condition, it's necessary to withdraw from the now and to engage the mind. To do this is to think, to remember, it is not to experience. Seeing the difference between the two, even in the presence of severe pain, is the beginning of freedom. Similarly, you do not actually experience that you are in a relationship. What is experienced is the moment's spoken and heard words, the expression or tone of a voice of the other person, the love or loathing presently moving like a current through your veins. It is necessary to go into the mind to say, this is a relationship, this is my mate, we're in trouble, we're madly in love. But these conceptual things are not felt the way the physical sensation or movement is. If you are a teacher, you do not experience being a teacher. Being a teacher is an idea. What you actually experience is the feel of chalk gripped in the fingers, the face of a student whose expression is registering comprehension, the movement of your eyes over the lines of a paper you're grading, the processing of the student's words. How radically liberating it is to see this in life as you're actually living it. The difference between life itself and how the mind gets applied. How transformative it is to observe the power we give the mind. How the mind constantly puts us at a distance from momentary life. How we can become lost in mental content and don't actually live at all. Being disidentified from the familiar sense of a self, from one's history, from all mental content, puts a person so thoroughly in this very moment that all that's felt to be real ever is the now. To be fully conscious is to allow to feel whatever the present moment stirs in the body in the inner space of awareness. Any mental commentary, any reference to another time or place is recognized as being the activity of the mind and is not confused with reality. Reality, being momentary, is constantly in flux. There is the recognition that this now is fleeting, even while right now it is real. It is neither pushed away nor held on to. There is no distance between you and the now, no interpretive mental filters. You feel yourself to be actually be the moment and nothing else, not your memories or desires or fears, not your beliefs or familiar identities. Imagine that. Living consciously invites a close look at the difference between life itself and anything in the mind. It is necessary to go into the mind to put this moment's experience into a kind of context, to label it unbearable, to explore its underlying cause, to recall it's part of an ongoing condition, to wonder how much longer it's going to last or how much worse it could get. This includes any attempt to frame the condition, including looking through a spiritual lens, to declare it karma or one's teacher, to generate a reason to go on living, to label self a fighter, survivor, victim, to assume an identity as a person with condition. The mind's attempt to put this moment's physical reality into some story takes you out of the moment, which is the only place peace is possible. The mind will try to come up with a consoling story, some escape or resolution, some justifiable reason to be consumed by fear, all in the name of the search for meaning or comfort. The irony is that the only possible comfort comes from complete surrender to what is right now. Even when the pain of the moment is terrible, whether it's physical or emotional, the form comfort takes when surrender is complete, when the mind is allowed to be quiet, is the peace that comes with spaciousness, allowing what is to be as it is. The pain is still there, but the alternative to resist otherwise mentally handle it only intensifies the discomfort. Yes, it isn't counterintuitive to relax into something that hurts. Indeed, the mind's primary occupation is to rescue us from hurt. Yet that's the very thing consciousness compels a person to do, and it is necessary to surrender without looking for relief as an outcome. True surrender is not do this so that. It's simply be fully with, because this is what's real right now. Being at a distance from life, this moment being all there is of life, subjects you to heightened pain you could be spared. This constant reinforced distance from momentary life is the primary reason unconsciousness and torment persist. This moment's pain is real and so must be allowed felt. But that doesn't mean chronic pain or any chronic situation has to become your identity. Identity lives in the mind, not in momentary bodily experience. Nor is it necessary to locate experience in any mental framework, though, of course, the mind will constantly try to draw you into doing that. Yes, there may be the background knowing that this condition or situation is ongoing, perhaps with an open-ended or unknown future. Surely there will be times it's useful or necessary to engage the mind to see if something might be done to improve things, for instance. To enter into this kind of exploration is consciously to be aware it's the mind's being engaged. It is to use the mind for this practical function, but not for fretting or projecting into an unknown knowable future. Even while thought is occurring, the felt experience of embodied awareness in the moment feels most real. What the mind is doing is recognized to be potentially useful while apart from this immediate sensation. Mental activity isn't used to generate a story. If that starts to happen, conscious awareness recognizes it for what it is and does not indulge it, does not confuse it with reality. If the circumstances of a condition suggest there is nothing to be done to improve it, the only sane thing to do is to surrender fully to your powerlessness and rest there. Anything short of this only compounds the suffering. It is crucial to be real about this, not to tell yourself you're fully surrendered if you're not. This is the case whether you're dealing with chronic physical discomfort or a loved one's lost in addiction.
Okay, excellent. Thank you, Connie, for reading that. And there's a bit more. We decided to stop there. So that the whole service didn't consist of the reading, to give ourselves time to comment on the reading. But I do recommend that you take a look at that article. It's on Jan Fraser's site, Consciousness and Chronic Pain. Again, thank you, Connie, for reading it. So let's look at it. Let's go through it. Well, one of the things Connie said after she read it was her concern was that it jumps right in. So if you're not fully present with this article at the beginning, you've missed it. So let's just start back at the beginning and look at some of the things that that Jan has said here. So what she's talking about is when she's talking about living consciously in the moment, and Connie and I were just talking about this actually. You know, so you hear, okay, let's live in the now. Somehow this article struck me differently than what I've always thought about when I've heard about living in the now. I was meditating on this a little bit last night, and I thought, oh my goodness, this is what, was it Ram Dass was talking about when he said, be here now? And this is very different than what I've ever heard on this subject before. So let's just see, let's be here now and see how this comes out. Barb says you sound like me. She's the older sister, so maybe I sound like her.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Okay. So let's look at this. Jan says, what's attended in this moment, whatever the moment consists of, however bad it may feel, however likely the condition may appear via the mind to be unending or uncertain, the now is not experienced as a moment in a succession of moments. It's simply the only thing that feels real. What we do with the current moment is we put it in a story. We try to give it context. Once we try and put it within this greater context of the who we think we are, the role that we think we're playing, the life that we think we're living, you know, as in chronic pain. Oh, here comes that pain again. You know, chronic is ongoing, right? So here comes that pain again. I'm putting this moment of pain into all the pain I've experienced in the past, all the pain I might experience in the future. So you can see how if you do that, it truly becomes unbearable. Whereas if you feel just the pain that you're feeling in this moment, it's not so overwhelming. And this is true with everything that we do. Instead of just experiencing what we're experiencing in this current moment, we try and put it in context of who I am, of what my role is, of how this person has treated me in the past, of how I've experienced these types of experiences in the past, of what this means for my future, of what this means for what you might think of me, right? So I try and put it in this context. And what do I do when I do that? I take myself out of the reality of what's actually happening now and put myself into what Jan Fraser calls a concurrent reality. She says, this impression of concurrent reality is, of course, an illusion. So when we talk about, you know, this is what the Course in Miracles is talking about when it's talking about laying our judgments on things, giving meaning to everything that I see, right? This is that. So that we don't experience reality as it comes. We don't experience each moment as the now. We experience it as one thing in a succession of moments from what happened in the past and what happened in the future. And we never, or we rarely, experience just the now. So we're living in this illusion of what this now means. Again, all the things that I said before. What does this say about me? What does this mean in terms of my role? You know, I love that description of the teacher, right, with the chalk. If you experience each moment, you don't think, oh, I'm a teacher. You just feel the chalk in your hands. You look at the comprehension on the student's face. It's not, I'm a teacher. It's, I'm experiencing this right now. I am fully engaged in this moment. Jan says, everything else, that is anything having to do with the ongoingness of the possible future, is accessible only when the mind is engaged, including the apparent reality of the mental stream, indulging the apparent reality of the mental stream only compounds the momentary physical pain. It's as though you're experiencing the future or a distant situation right now. But as we know, the future can't actually be experienced. You're making that up. And as we know, once you engage the mind, that's where pain comes from. That's where suffering comes from. In contrast, by being in the present, by refusing to entertain the stories that the mind would tell, being in the present allows you to actually experience life. In fact, Jan says, to recall that this momentary experience is part of an ongoing condition, it's necessary to withdraw attention from the now and to engage the mind. To do this is to think or to remember. It is not experience. Seeing the difference between the two, even in the presence of severe pain, is the beginning of freedom. I really also liked, you know, so she put this into several contexts. One context, one was the teacher. The other she talked about was in relationship. She's saying you're not even experiencing, you're really, truly experiencing your relationships. You're not fully engaged with that person that you are, quote unquote, in a relationship with. Instead, what we do is we put it in context and you say, this is my relationship. This is my mate. We're in trouble. Oh my God, what does this mean for what, you know, oh wow, what we've been experiencing, where we're going? Or we are so madly in love. But you see, immediately you're taking yourself out of that experience of love and you're contextualizing it. You've moved from your heart to your mind. You've moved from reality to illusion. From reality to the story about reality. Yeah, and what Jan says is she talks about the mind constantly puts us at a distance from momentary life. We become lost in mental content and don't actually live at all. She says being disidentified from the familiar sense of self. Wow, you know, how long have we been talking about that? How long have I been thinking about that? How do I disidentify from myself? You know, you all have probably heard me say before how impacted I was when I heard Regina talk about a message that she and Laurent had received from Holy Spirit that said, you have got to quit thinking of each other as persons. How do I quit thinking of myself as a person? I quit putting my experience into the context of who I think I am as a person. I start just experiencing the now as it's presented. I don't think, ooh, what does that say about me as a person? You know, I might cry, so this is a heads up. I had a very dear friend pass away this week. And I was very sorry to lose him. And when I shared this story with people, the hardest part of the story was telling how I hadn't called him lately, and so I didn't know he was in the hospital. And I had heard that he asked for me right before he passed. And it was very hard, and I didn't get to see. And I told somebody that story yesterday at the funeral home. And the thing about it is, I loved him dearly, and I will miss him. But when I'm upset in that part of the story, what I'm upset about is, gosh, what didn't I do for the past 6 months when I didn't call him, right? What does this say about me as a person? Listen, this doesn't take away from the fact that I loved him dearly and that I will miss him. But I'm not crying because he's gone when I'm in that story. When I'm in that story, I'm crying because, my God, what does this say about me? I knew he was sick, right? I didn't call him. What an awful person you are, Jacqueline. Yeah, thank you all for being with me. So let's look again at what Jan says. She says, being disidentified from the familiar sense of a self, from one's history, from all mental content, puts a person so thoroughly in this very moment that all that's felt to be real ever is the now. When you allow yourself to be fully in the moment, there is no distance between you and the now. There are no interpretive mental filters. I mean, you can see in that experience that I just shared, you can see how I was causing myself additional pain. You know, it's okay to just love my friend who's now deceased. It's okay to just love him without having to put all that context to it. None of that's real anyway. You know what he would say? He'd say, oh, that's okay, baby doll. Don't worry about it. Jan says, living consciously invites a close look at the difference between life itself and anything in the mind. To put this moment's experience into any kind of context, to label it unbearable, to explore its underlying cause, to recall it's part of an ongoing condition, to wonder how much longer it's going to last, or how much worse it could get. It's necessary to go into the mind. The mind is used to frame the condition, including looking through a spiritual lens, to declare it karma, or one's teacher, to generate a reason to go on living, to label self a fighter, a survivor, a victim, to assume an identity as a person with whatever condition. And the thing is, well, let me read the next line here. She says, the mind's attempt to put this moment's physical reality into some story takes you out of the moment, which is the only place peace is possible. So all this contextualizing we do, this attempt to say, oh, this is good, this is bad, oh, this tells me this about this person, this tells me this about myself, this makes me look good, this makes me look spiritual. Oh, this is like the same thing he said last time. He always treats me that way. To do anything like that takes you out of this moment. And this moment is where peace is, even if you're experiencing physical or emotional pain in the moment. It's still the only place peace is. You know, it's interesting that I'm getting this lesson right now. This week, our Untethered Soul class starts. Michael Singer's book, The Untethered Soul. And, of course, he's saying the same thing. You know, what our mind is designed to do, or at least what we've used it for, is to make ourselves more comfortable with our surroundings, to try and give ourselves a sense of control that, frankly, we never possessed anyway. But if we can narrate what's going on with us, if we can put it in a larger context, we believe, then it feels controllable. We feel on top of it. Okay, I got this covered because I know how this fits with this fits with this fits, and I don't have to wonder, right? I'm in control. I'm not at the mercy of the vicissitudes of life. I've got this. But the truth is, it's this attempt to put things in a larger context, to tell us a story about what's going on in the moment. That's where the pain is. Because what's going on in the moment is where the peace can be found. Surrendering to that moment, whatever the experience is where the peace is found. Trying to tell those bigger stories is what brings us pain. And Jan tells us that this recognition, the difference between what we're really experiencing and the mind's attempt to tell us stories about what we're really experiencing, this is the key to freedom. This recognition of the difference of those two things is the beginning of freedom. So, she says, yeah, it's counterintuitive to relax into something that hurts. Indeed, the mind's primary occupation is to rescue us from hurt. She says, yet that's the very thing consciousness compels a person to do. She says, it's necessary to surrender without looking for relief as an outcome. Oh, if I surrender to this, then I'll be fixed. You see, you've already stuck yourself in the future moment, right? Then, if this, then. She says, true surrender is not do this so that. It's simply to be fully with. Because being fully with is what is real right now. So it's a practice. It's a lovely practice. And you can tell the difference. You know when you're running off and telling a story. You know, or you know when you're just sitting with the experience that you're having now. She says, being at a distance from life subjects you to a heightened pain that you could, in fact, be spared. Now, for those of you who are like, wow, if I never think, what's going to happen? You know, I mean, how does one live their life without thinking, for God's sakes? Surely there will be times it's useful or necessary to engage the mind. And, you know, she admits that. Sometimes you will want to engage the mind. You'll want to see if something might be done to improve things. Well, let's think. You know, I'm in a bad situation right this minute. Is there something that I can do to change this? Should I take pain medication? Should I leave this man who's hitting me? I mean, right? So occasionally, you're going to need to engage the mind. But that's a conscious decision to engage the mind. You're not projecting yourself into a future. You're not saying, oh, I'm experiencing this and it's never going to stop if I don't, blah, blah, blah. You see the difference between the story and going, okay, is there something I should be doing to fix this? That's what she says. She says it's to use the mind for this practical function, but not for fretting or projecting into an unknowable future. Or for that matter, lamenting the past, right? She says, mental activity isn't used to generate a story in this conscious engagement of the mind. Mental activity isn't used to generate a story. Or if that starts to happen, conscious awareness recognizes it for what it is, and does not indulge it, does not confuse it with reality. That's what you're being asked to do here now. And that's, you see, that's so different for me than what I've heard about be here now. It does not indulge the storytelling. You do not indulge the storytelling. You do not allow yourself to waller in your past. Waller, as we'd say in the South here. You don't waller in your past. You don't fret about the future. You just be with what's happening right now. And, you know, when I was meditating this morning, it came to me that this is a lot like a form of meditation that I have been known to teach from time to time. You know, people will go, oh, meditation, what's that? And so I'll tell them about a process that I used at one point. And that was, as I sat there, you know, what are you supposed to try and not think or what? So here's what I would do. As I sat there, I would see a thought come into my mind. And I was able to quickly label that thought, oh, that's a thought about the past, and kind of wipe it away. Or, that's a thought about the future, and kind of wipe it away. At one point I added, that's a thought about my body, and I would wipe that away. But the wiping that away, you know, kind of like windshield wipers, you know, the past, oh, the future, oh, the body, and just wipe that away. And that way I wouldn't indulge the stories. Right? So what meditation was, and frankly is for me now, even though I don't use that method, what it is a really conscious attempt to just be in this moment. So it doesn't mean thoughts won't occur. It just means that I am going to use this opportunity to not indulge those thoughts. And that's what Jan Fraser is asking us to do. To take this opportunity and every opportunity, not to indulge the attempt to contextualize what's going on now, not to indulge the mind's attempt to tell you stories about what's going on now and how that fits into any larger context. That's what being here now means. Jan says, in the portion that Connie did not read to you, Jan says, because the mind's contents tend to hook attention more than the sensory in-motion moment, a person likely isn't at all aware of living most moments as they occur. Nevertheless, each present moment, whatever it may hold, however bad it may feel, is the single scrap of life that's ever real, that's actually experienced. All else is memory, concept, anticipation. Experience doesn't require mental engagement. Let me read that again. Experience doesn't require mental engagement. What the mind does with experience is at a distance from life itself. Now let me read you these final two paragraphs in this article where Jan summarizes her message. To recognize the gulf between aliveness itself and anything generated by the mind, however true it appears to be, is the liberating discovery. It is how you come to know what you deeply are, what reality is. It's how you come to dwell in the moment's expression of being alive, rather than the illusory living in the mind's story of life. The now is what it is. You didn't pick it. It has never been otherwise, however much you may have wanted it to be. What if that knowing became a part of you, like something in your bones, moving with you as you moved, moment to moment? What if that embodied knowing experienced what is as simply what it is to be alive right now? This is what it is to be conscious, to be free. This is living in the now. This is living in reality. This is what I invite all of you to join with me in doing. And just wipe those, you know, wipe those pasts away. Wipe that context away. Oh, what does this say about me as a friend? What does this say about me as a teacher? What does it say about me as whatever you do in your daily life? Let go of that. Quit trying to contextualize and live in this moment now. It doesn't say anything. That's all a story. Let's all remember this as we go into our lives and really feel what it feels like to be in this moment and now in this moment and in this moment. Okay, guys. I love you all. I'm so thrilled to be here with you. I'm so thrilled to be able to share with you so that I can hear what my inner wisdom has to say to me. I love you all dearly. I'm going to let go of the mic and let Lynn play us another song. While the song is playing, you'll have the opportunity to donate to Awakening Together. We appreciate your donations. But you will also have the opportunity to really contemplate what's been said here today, to really sit with this teaching. And then we'll want to hear from you and your thoughts. Okay. I love you guys. And Lynn, take the mic.
I grew up in silence. From silence I became my history. They fed me fear and violence, They hooked me up to this reality. Oh. No, I'm not cursing anyone. They only did what they had done to them. But if you want to know where I am now, then just breathe in. Let it out.
You know what this part of the service is. It's time for you to speak your mind. And we'd love to hear from you. Okay, Regina, please take the mic.
Good morning, everyone. First of all, I want to say, of course, and everybody knows this. I'm not saying anything they don't already know. But that was a magnificent reading and a magnificent teaching. Thank you very much, Jacqueline. And Connie. And Jan. And Lynn. For your music selections. I just want to share something funny that happened at the beginning of the contemplation after your teaching that also emphasizes the teaching in a way that maybe all of us can identify with. So about a year ago, I did a teaching. Some of you may remember I read a story that Michael Langford wrote about how he would go to listen to Krishnamurti. And immediately after Krishnamurti, all the other people got up and began chattering about, you know, the past and the future. They immediately went right back to it. But he would stay for an hour asking within his own mind, you know, what did Krishnamurti say? What did Krishnamurti say and contemplate it? Well, ever since I taught that here in the sanctuary, that's what I do during our contemplation time. that follows the teaching. I use that to contemplate what was just read, what was just said. I don't go off, okay, now let me start thinking about something else while the music's playing. I stay with it, you know, and I literally ask, you know, what did Jacqueline just say? What did Jan just say? I mean, I follow that example. And so, and so what happened then was I asked, what did Jacqueline just say? What did Jan just say? And the first answer that came was something like, you know, just be absolutely in this moment. And so then I asked, okay, what am I aware of absolutely in this moment? And my hand happened to be laying on my belly, and I felt my belly. And the mind chimed in, I'm fat. And I started laughing because I was seeing all of this with clarity. I realized that, you know, there is a little something here, you know, a part of the belly that was not a part of the belly when I was 18. When I was 18, if the hand was on the belly, you know, it was perfectly flat. Now when the hand is on the belly, there's a roll here. And I just laughed because I thought it was so funny. I thought, you know, the only way the mind can say I'm fat is to compare the feeling of this little roll to a memory of what this belly felt like at age 18. And that if there is no thought at all, this is the key point of the teaching, I think. If there is no thought at all of the past or the future, no possible comparison, there cannot even be a thought of I'm fat. There cannot be a thought of I'm in good shape now. And notice how both of those thoughts have I in them. I'm fat is an identification. I'm in good shape now is an identification. It's a thought of who I am, what I am, a false identification, which is the point that Jan has been making. If there's none of that and there's just the hand on the belly feeling a little roll, I mean, there's just none of that. I don't know how else to say it. There's no judgment of the belly as good. There's no judgment of the belly as bad. There is just the feeling of this hand on a bit of soft flesh. Thanks.
Lily Regina, thank you for sharing. And funny. We had a good laugh here while our hands were all in our bellies. Lynn, please take the mic.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much, Jacqueline, for when I got that thing from Jan Fraser, I said, I have this experience. I know how this is. And it is so amazing. It is the mind that is making up the experience of this world. It's the mind that is making up this experience that we are having in this world. And the mind will tell you, you know, my knee hurts. When I am in my right mind, my knee does not hurt. And when I am not in my right mind, my knee is incredibly painful. Right now it's not incredibly painful, so I think I'm probably doing okay. But what I was going to say is that this has been my experience for my lifetime, since the first time I had, when I was hit by a car, and I recognized that the pills that they were giving me for the pain, because my leg was shattered in a million pieces. I mean, literally, they could not put my leg back together again. So, and that seems odd, but it's true. But when that happened, it was an incredibly painful thing for me. And but I had been meditating. This was when I was 18, and I had been meditating for like 3 years before that. And so I just learned to go into a state where I was not thinking about the past, thinking about the past or thinking about the future. Just in this very now moment, I had no pain at all. And so to get into that moment and to stay there is really helpful for your life. But it also trains your mind. When I had, you know, a baby, went through labor with no pain, having, you know, so many things that have happened to me, being able to just shut off the pain, to have a migraine headache and ask myself, how much longer am I going to tell this story, and recognizing not another moment, because it's a story that I'm telling myself and telling other people about pain. When I realize I'm not going to tell the story anymore, the pain, it immediately is gone. And I'm also going to say, if that doesn't happen to you, do not feel like you're doing it wrong or you're guilty, because there is no way to do it right. It really is whatever way it's done. It just was, for me, a thing that worked. And so I loved Jan's article, and I love that you brought it up today. And thank you, Connie, for reading. I love you, Angel. And thank you, Jacqueline, letting go of this mic.
Oh, Lynn, I said you made her giggle. thank you for those, yes, for those really practical, or those examples of practical application of what we're talking about here this moment. They're fabulous. And can you imagine, Lynn, if we can take this with us into every moment? You know, if we can just start living from here in every moment, how awesome is that? I mean, I'm just like, I'm filled up with it. I love it. Gloria, take the mic. No mic yet, Gloria. Okay, Gloria, I'm sorry. Try again in a minute, I guess, if you can figure out what's going on there. And I'm sorry to say I do not know who Nabote is. I know, but it's not coming to me in this instance. So anyway, please take the mic. Oh, Monica. Monica, please take the mic.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for the service. I thank all of you, Jan Frazier, and all the trusted servants that ran this gathering. Thank you so much. Just kind of, you know, how dealing with pain. As a lot of you know, my fiance, he's in New York City right now in Mount Sinai Hospital. He had his second open heart surgery in about 4 months. So I'm telling you this story. He's doing very well and a good chance of survival. He had the best possible surgeon. And, it's been a lot of emotional pain. Thank you. It is good news. Thank you so much. Mount Sinai has a very good reputation, and his surgeon has a magnificent reputation. And actually, so many people have been praying for Pete and for myself. And I read the report. For some reason, Pete got the report from the surgeon, which was the play-by-play of all what they did. And at the very end, the surgeon wrote, "The patient is doing amazingly well." Now, I attribute that. The surgeon was amazed. I attribute that to all the prayer that has been directed at Pete. You know, there's all kinds of people from all kinds of traditions that have prayed for Pete and have prayed for me. So I thank you. The pain around that situation has to do with fear. My fear that he won't come back. And as some of you know, I'm handicapped with this drop foot after the brain surgeries. And when Pete is with me, he helps me tremendously, and he helps me a lot with daily living skills, and that frees up some of my energy for other things, where when he's not here, it takes all my energy, like to make a pot of coffee and scoop the litter box and that type of thing. So, I don't want to live in fear, and both Pete and I feel optimistic about his recovery. And pain does come when I'm out of the very, very present moment. But the present moment can contain pain. And, I guess what matters is, does it contain suffering? You know, the pain can be more of a pure sensation without an attachment to the future or the past. So, you know, I thank you all for that lovely service, and I feel very blessed. A couple I know took me into New York yesterday. I'm in New Jersey, I don't drive anymore, and they took me in to see Pete, and it was such a gift. And it was people that I know that feel that they are doing the hands and feet of Christ's work. And so they took me into New York. This was very wonderful. So, you know, I'm blessed with many wonderful people in my life, and any prayers for myself and Pete are definitely appreciated. Thank you so much for the lovely service. Let me unlock the mic.
Thank you, Monica. We are so pleased to hear that Pete is doing so well. Yeah, amazingly well. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I'm really, really pleased to hear that. And I know everyone here is. We will keep you and Pete in our thoughts and prayers. I also want to thank you for drawing that clear distinction between the pain that you're experiencing in the moment and suffering, the suffering. So thank you. Thank you so much for sharing. And then let's see, Modern Mystic. I think it's Ron. You had your, yeah, okay. I'll let go of the mic. Take the mic, please.
When my heart opens up.
Those were beautiful songs. Perfect, perfect. Thank you. Okay. I guess I would ask Gloria if she had anything else she wanted to say. I think we're about wrapped up here, but well, anything else? I mean, Gloria, okay, take the mic.
Okay, do I have sound? Perfect, perfect. I am here. Thank you, Reverend Jacqueline. Thank you, Connie, and thank you to everybody who has shared today. I just wanted to add a couple of things. First of all, what you talked about today is very near and dear to my heart. One of the reasons why the book that we're doing in our book club, Rupert Spira, it's all about direct experience, and that's one of the reasons why I was drawn to that work. Because one of the things you talked about today, concurrent realities, the concurrent reality that we create out of our thoughts, out of our ideas, out of our conceptions, have literally nothing to do with the reality, with true reality, with pure beingness, with being here, with experiencing life as it appears. So that's very near and dear to me, and I'm very passionate about learning and about unlearning, so that I am just in the now. I'm just here. I'm just experiencing, because that's what is in my nature to actually do. You also talked about, in relationships and being in the world, again, the concurrent reality there, but, there was a part where you were speaking about the conscious attempt to be in this moment, and one of the practices that you personally did, and Lynn also shared a practice that she does. And for me, when I can see my mind going, I've watched my mind enough to know that when I'm going off into a story, you can see that. If you're in the habit of paying attention to the mind, being with the mind and looking and questioning what you're thinking, you can see when the mind begins to veer off into a story. So one of the things that I do when I can clearly see that the story is starting, I go thinking, thinking, thinking. And those three words are enough for me to snap out of that story and come back to just being present. So that's my little practice that I use, and I just wanted to come on and say thank you. It was a great teaching today, and love to you all. I'll let go of the mic.
Thanks, Gloria. That's great. That's a great practice. Yeah, anything that can keep you from indulging in that story, that's awesome. Thank you so much. Okay, guys, my time here is through. I love you all. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being my mighty companions. And I'll see you tonight at 8 for a spirit-led movie discussion group on The Nuns. Okay, love you guys. Bye.
Thank you, Reverend Jacqueline Eckert, and all who stayed here with us and hung out. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful service. And let me see if the recordings. I put on two recordings.